Good morning to everybody. Thank you very much for tuning in. I know everybody's got a lot to do. It's a very busy couple of days till Pesach, so to take out a little bit of time to come to Rosh Hashanah is an amazing thing. So it's really nice to see you all. I must apologize in advance. Well, I don't really need to apologize, but if you hear screaming in the background, that's not my wife, don't worry. That is my grandchildren. We're very excited to have our grandchildren with us. Baruch Hashem, we're able to do that this year. I'm sure some of you have also are also enjoying that privilege. So if you hear screaming in the background or crying, then don't be alarmed. It's a couple of toddlers doing their thing. So I'd like to just mention the dedication for the Shir. The Shir is sponsored anonymously for the whole of 2021 in the merit of an Aliyah for the Neshamas of Matisyahu Ben Yisrael, Aaron Ben Menachem Lev, and Eliana Bas Yaakov. We really are grateful for that sponsorship for the whole of the year. Okay, what are we going to do today? Today, with a little bit of mazel, is the last Shir that we're giving just on Zoom. I hope that, next week there will be no Shir Chol HaMoed. I hope that the week after Chol HaMoed will be up live, also on Zoom. I hope that we'll be also be able to reach you on Zoom. But today is the last Shir. I hope that we'll be only on Zoom. Actually, I looked at the records. This is actually our 50th Shir on Zoom. So we've had 50 Shirim from when everything locked down last year, and Be'ezrat Hashem, we will be back to a more normal feeling to some degree anyway next week. Okay, fine. Let us talk about this topic. I'd like to talk about soft matzah and hard matzah. Many of you are aware, I'm sure most of you, that over the last few years, maybe a decade or so, on the market has drifted this soft matzah that people often find much more tasty. It's called Sephardi matzah. We'll see that's a little bit of a misnomer. It's not really Sephardi matzah, because the Sephardim also eat hard cracker-like matzah. But I want to look into that. What exactly is that? Why do we now suddenly find that after we've been eating the matzah we're used to for the last couple of hundred years, all of a sudden there's a soft matzah option as well? We have to look at where it comes from, what are the Masorahs, what are our traditions? Do we indeed as Ashkenazim have a tradition for soft matzahs, or indeed Sephardim? We'll talk about the Yemenites as well. So I've put the sheet on the chat. I'm going to share the screen. We've got a lot to do today. It's actually a very jam-packed Shir, but it's also got some pictorial interludes. We'll have a look at some illustrated Haggadahs and try and work out, really, the question is, what is matzah and how is it made? Okay, let's start with some straightforward stuff that will be good. Chazara will get us ready for the Seder night. Why do we eat matzah at all? Number one, so the Torah says, Shivas yamim matzah stoichelu. You have to eat matzah for 7 days. Ach b'yom rishon, on the day before Pesach, on the first day, if you like, of the whole chag, the day before Pesach, tashvisu se'or mibateichim, we have to get rid of all the chametz. Ki kol ha'oichel chametz v'nichrus ha'nefesh ha'hi Yisrael. Anyone who eats chametz on Pesach, there's an obligation of kares, which is very serious, obviously, losing the world to come. Miyom harishon, from the very first day of Pesach ad yom ha'shvi'i. So there are 7 days of Pesach. 7 days to eat matzah. However, the Torah specifically focuses as an obligation on the first night. This is stuff that we've done before to get us in the mood. Number two, Barishan ba'arba asa yom lechodesh ba'erev tochlu matzahs. On that first day when we get rid of, meaning the Erev Chag day, when we get rid of all the chametz, okay, this year's Shabbos, we talked about that last week. On that evening, tochlu matzahs, you have to eat matzah ad yom ha'echad until the Echad ba'esrim, until the 21st day lechodesh ba'erev. Fine. What's the difference between all 7 days and the first day? So the Rambam puts it out here in number three. Mitzvahs asei min ha-Torah lechol matzah b'leil chamisha'asa. It is a Torah mitzvah to eat matzah on the 15th. Now, look carefully at his language. He doesn't say that it's a mitzvah to eat a kazayas. He said it's a mitzvah to eat matzah. And people want to read into this Rambam that actually the first night, Seder night, all the matzah that you eat from beginning to end of the Seder is actually part of the Torah mitzvah. Shadeh marba erev tuchlu matzahs, you have to eat matzahs in the evening. Aval b'shar regel, but the rest of the regel, achilas matzah rishus. The rest of the Pesach, you can eat matzah if you like. It's an option. It's not an obligation. Ratza oichel matzah, if you want to eat matzah, eat matzah. Ratza oichel orez adoichin. If you'd rather eat rice or millet, you can eat that. Or klayot, or nuts, or pirot, or fruit. Now, obviously, leave aside kidneyot. Rambam is Sephardi, he's not concerned about kidney. On that first night, on the 15th, chovah, That is an obligation. Once you ate a kazayis, you've done the minimum you need to do. You've fulfilled the obligation. But like we said, it seems like the matzah is not just the first kazayis, but there's a mitzvah to eat all of the matzvah on Seder night. What about the rest of Pesach? So the Chizkuni, number four, fascinating Chizkuni says, Yesh lecha dvarim shemekavlim schar be'asiyasam. There are some things in the Torah that you get a reward when you do them, and the punishment when you don't do them. Like first night, the Laila Rishon, the first matzah on the first night, which is an obligation. And there are other things which are more, open. It's up to you. You don't get the same reward when you do them, and you're certainly not punished if you don't. Like matzah for the rest of the chag. But here's an important point. So it says with the matzah, you have to eat it for 7 days. Kloima, what does that mean? Im oichel matzah kol shivas hayamim kiem haposek ze shal shivas yamim matzahs tochelu. An interesting idea. He says it's not a mitzvah really to eat for the rest of Pesach, because the Gemara said and Rambam says Rishus. But you kept the verse. The verse says to eat it for 7 days. So you kept the kind of pshat of the verse. There's something to be said for that. And the Vilna Gaon kind of upgrades that. And he says, not only that, this is quite famous. We looked at this a couple of years ago. The Vilna Gaon says, number five, Shiva Shamin Toichel Matzah is called Shiva's Mitzvah. All 7 days is actually a mitzvah, not just the first night. It's just not an obligation. It's only called a Rishus, an option, in comparison to the mitzvah, the obligation on the first night, Shechovah, which is obligatory. When you compare a mitzvah with a chayva, meaning it's not just obligation and non-obligation. There's three levels. There's chova, mitzvah, and rishut. So compared to a mitzvah, so a chova looks like a rishut. The Rambam makes it very clear that it is a Torah mitzvah to eat matzahs all the way through the chag, and then and so too the Vilna Gaon wanted to say that the yontif of Pesach does not require tefillin. There's a whole discussion. Do you need to put the ois, the sign of tefillin, on yontif? So he says no, because yontif has a mitzvah going all the way through it, not just on the first night. Pesach b'matzvah, Sukkos b'sukkah. And quite a famous psak of the Gaon, that there are no tefillin during Chol HaMoed. This is obviously not the same in Chutz La'aretz. Often there is, there are people who wear tefillin in Chutz La'aretz. I'm not getting into that now. V'oy kamarayis, and there are other things to say as well. And now the comments on the Vilna Gaon himself. V'hayim achaviv ma'oid mitzvah sachiles matzah kol shiva. The Gaon was very careful to eat matzah all 7 days. Ubi yontzev achron, on the last day of Pesach, haya oichel sudash lishit. Even though it's yontzev and you don't need sudash lishit, he would have a sudash lishit. Afa bishalo haya oichel shalosh sudas, even though you don't eat shalosh sudas b'shar yontzev, on a regular yontzev, he would on Pesach. Mipnei chavivas matzah sachila, mitzvah sachilas matzah shizman holech lo, because it's the end of Pesach. This is often called the ne'ilat tachag or the sudas mashiach, depending on whether you're chasidish or not chasidish. But on this meal, everybody's together in the sense that we all want to eat a bit more matzah just before it leaves the chag, because there is a mitzvah, says the Gaon, to eat matzah all the way through. Fine. So far, it's a little bit of chazara. We've done this before. We've looked at that. So matzah is very important to us. What is matzah made from? So the Torah, unsurprisingly, does not define what matzah is. The definition of mitzvah objects in the Torah comes under the oral law. And the Rambam, as I think is fairly familiar, divides the oral law into five categories. The first of his five categories is what he calls Pirushim HaMekubalim, received understandings and interpretations of the Torah, so that we know when the Torah says eat matzah, sit in a sukkah, shake pre-eight sadar. We know what those are because the oral law fulfills that in. But the Chumash itself doesn't. So from the Torah Shebaal Peh, what do we know about matzah? So look in number six. Again, we've seen this before. Elu dvarim she'adam yotze behem yidei chavasa b'Pesach. These are the things that you can eat for matzah. Chitim, b'sayirim, b'kusmim, b'shifam, b'shibol ashur. And we talked about this last week a little bit, 2 weeks ago with Chadash. Kusmin, chita is wheat, sarin is barley, kusmin is spelt, shifon is rye, and shibolit shual is oats. And we talked about the fact that there are a number of questions about not only oats, but also shifon and to some degree kusmin. I'm not getting into that now, but it has to be one of these five grains. And that's what the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, number 7, Eilu Dvarim Shiyotzi Behem Yidei Chavos Matzah. These are the things you can use for matzah. Chitzin Sa'orim B'kusmim B'shiba L'Shol B'shifa. Says the Ramah, V'haminag Lekach L'chadchila Chitzin. But the minag is to take wheat, if at all possible. And we talked a few years ago when we talked about celiacs and oat matzahs, that most of the poskim understand that the Ramah is just saying, well, that's what we used to, or that's what we know how to make. But if you want to eat matzah from any of the other five grains, that's perfect. But oats is a shiloh, we talked about that. But let's stick with wheat, because wheat is what most of our matzah is made from. So Adkan, up to now, you're probably familiar with almost everything we talked about. But now we need to get into the key question for today. Why is some matzah different from other matzah? Matzah is made of flour, let's call wheat, let's say wheat flour, and water. So, I mean, what can you make different with flour and water? It just makes bread or matzah, so we'll see how this works. So first of all, I brought you here, what is wheat? It's good to know what wheat is. I brought you a little diagram of the anatomy of a wheat germ with the germ in the middle, which is the embryo, which would grow if you let it grow. The endosperm, which is the food to serve that little embryo, and the bran, which is a kind of klipa, the husk on the outside. The key thing for our purposes is as follows. When you turn wheat flour into dough, the flour and the water break down the complex sugars in the wheat, and they turn them into simple sugars. Once those sugars are simplified, the natural yeasts within the mixture can start converting them to carbon dioxide and alcohol, but the alcohol evaporates off. The bread is not alcoholic, but the carbon dioxide starts to bubble out. When you have a flour which is made with gluten in it, the gluten is sticky and it traps those bubbles as they're trying to come out. So the combination of the gluten and the bubbles causes it to rise. The key thing at the end here for us is, look here, I'll zoom in a little bit more because this will set the tone. Typical bread and soft laffa-like matzah made by Yemenites has a crust. Now, our matzah doesn't have a crust, but theirs has a crust that differs from the inside, known as the crumb. The crust is hardened and brown due to the intense heat that leads to something called the Maillard reaction, in which the amino acids and sugars in the bread combine to form something with the rather handy name of 6-acetyl-2,3,4,5-tetrahydropyridine. I probably didn't say that right, but it doesn't matter. This seals the inside, permitting it to retain some of its moisture. And here's the key thing for us. Thin matzah is made with less water and baked uniformly, drying out inside and out, such that there is no crust and it's completely dry. And here's the first key point. If you want to make soft, thick matzahs, you need to cook them in such a way that forms a crust around it, so the moisture stays inside, and you need to use a lot more water in the dough mix. The matzah that we eat today, the very thin, cracker-like matzah, is cooked very uniformly. They don't let it form a crust, and they make it with minimal water. So one of the key ingredients in making different kinds of matzahs is the water content. We'll get to that in a few minutes. Of course, the key ingredient for us in terms of halacha is time. How much time is allowed between putting the water in the flour and removing the matzah from the oven? So I'm just going to briefly mention to you here, looking number 8, says the Shulchan Aruch, lo yenicho ha'isa b'loy esik kafila rega'acha. You can't leave the dough. If you've ever been to a matzah factory, it's very energetic. You can't leave the dough even for a second, because every minute that you leave it, the clock starts. But kol zman shemit asking, but in theory, all the time that you're working with it, kneading the dough, afilu kol hayom, even if you went a whole day, einu machmitz, don't worry about the time. If you're busy kneading it, it won't rise. The imi nichu b'loy esek, but once you leave it without working the dough, then you have a sheer mill. If you have 18 minutes of time, have a chametz, then it will be chametz. The shear mill have a revir shah v'chelik me'esher min hashah. The shear mill, we said, is a quarter of an hour and a 20th of an hour, which is 3 minutes, which makes 18 minutes. The Ramah says, but we try to cut that down if we possibly can. Says the Ramah, yesh lahachmi lamaher b'inyan asiyas lamatzah. The quicker you can, the better it'll be. Ki yesh lachoshesh ashiyud yistarfo l'shir mil, because every minute that you leave it all adds together to make those 18 minutes. Or sheyir b'mokam cham, and we're worried that it might be hot. It's in a hot country, it's on a hot day. Your hands, the friction makes it hot. Shemamaher lahachmitz, and it makes it go and turn into chometz more quickly. So everybody knows, therefore, 18 minutes, although I did bring you in the Mishnah Berurah here in the Bir HaLocha, that there are opinions 22 and a half minutes, 24 minutes, exactly how long a mil is, we usually go with 18 minutes. And the Bir HaLocha there says, unless you have exceptional circumstances, 18 minutes is the psak, okay? So flour plus water plus 18 minutes or less than 18 minutes, equals matzah. Once it's a little bit more than 18 minutes, then already you're in the land of chometz. So how can there be different types of matzah? So like I said, there are a few variables. The first variable is, what kind of oven do you use? Is it a metal oven? Is it an earthenware oven? Is it a large oven? Is it a small oven? That makes a big difference. Secondly, the temperature that you bake the matzahs. Is it a hot oven? Is it a cool oven? A hot oven will obviously bake something on the surface much more quickly, but leave the inside more moist. A slow, low temperature oven will burn things in a more uniform way. And what is the flour-water ratio? So there are many things that go into making matzahs other than the ingredients, the oven, the temperature, the water ratio, etc. And the Mishnah already says this, remarkably, number 10, Rabbi Akiva, Omer Rabbi Akiva, in Pesachim says, Lo kol ha-nashim, all women are not the same. The lo kol ha-eitzim, and wood is not the same. The lo kol ha-tanurim shavim, and not all ovens are the same. There are women who bake differently, and men as well, obviously. There's wood that somewhat is different, somewhat is moist, somewhat is dry, and there are ovens that are different. So all of those things make a big difference to the final product. I brought you here a little bit here. Regular Ashkenazi matzah has 300 milliliters of water for every kilogram of flour. Regular hand matzah has a little bit more, 400 to 500 kilograms and milliliters of water, but soft Yemenite hand matzah has up to 830 milliliters of water for every kilogram of flour. That's a very big difference. So you see already the soft matzah has a lot of water in it, and that's going to make a difference. Now, let's get into the actual halachic discussion. Where does the Gemara discuss thick and thin matzahs? Let's look at this together. There is one sugya in Pesachim. It's not so complicated, but we need to read it inside. So everybody, eyes down. This is the main focus of the first discussion. Says the Gemara, Tana Rabbana, Ein Oifin Pas Ava V'Pesach. You're not allowed to make Pas Ava. Pas Ava means, Av means thick. You can't make thick bread on Pesach. Divrei Beis Shammai. That's what Beis Shammai says. Beis Hillel Matirim. Beis Hillel say, it's fine. We're not worried about how thick the bread, the matzah is. You can have thick matzahs. Says the Gemara of Akama Pas Ava, how thick is thick? Amar Rav Huna Tefach, one Tefach. Shekei Matzinu Belechem Hapanim Tefach, because the Lechem Hapanim was a Tefach thick. I've brought you here a little bit of a diagram. There's some diagrams on today's sheet. You see, this is a diagram of what we think the Lechem Hapanim may have looked like. This is a sort of a mock-up here at the top. There are different theories of the design, whether it's like a square with an open top, or whether the upper flaps are pushed in, or whether it's more of an oval shape or a straight shape with a little bit on the top. But it was a tefach thick. So the first opinion here says, Beis Shammai says it may be no more than one tefach. And Beis Hillel says, no, it can be more than a tefach. Thick. We're talking about 9 centimeters, 3 or 4 inches thick. Fine. Matkiv lav Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef jumps in now and says, I don't think this is correct. Im amru bizrizim, if you said this with the lechem apanim in the Beis HaMikdash, the Kohenim were very careful. Yomru b'she'enu zrizim. How do you know the people baking matzahs in the houses are going to be careful enough? You can't bank on that. So it's not the same. Im amru b'pas ha'mele, if you talk about a bread where they were constantly working it, constantly, it was enormous. Yomru b'pas she'enu ha'mele, matzah, it's not the same. It may not be as much exercise in it. If you talk about dry wood, the laws of the Beis HaMikdash were very, very strict. You could only use wood which was totally dry. Maybe with matzah they'll use moist wood. And they used a very, very hot oven. We use a cool oven, is it the same? And finally, in the Mikdash they had a metal oven, and in people's homes they had earthenware. So says Rav Yosef, I don't like the comparison with the lechem apanim. They're two completely different things. Different people, different oven, different mixture. Therefore, I'm not happy with this whole tefach situation. Okay, we'll see in a minute what the poskim say about that. Now, B is the second half of this sugya. Amar Rav Yirmiyahu bar Abba, so Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba says the following. She'elit et Rebbe b'yichud. I've asked my very favorite rabbi, Uman, who is that rav? Ve'ikud Amri, and some people read it not like that, but Rabbi Yirmiya bar Abba Amar Rav, that he, in the name of Rav, said, Sha'ilit et Rabbi miyuchad, I've asked my favorite Rabbi, who is that? Rabbeinu HaKadosh. That's not so relevant for now. A completely new take. My pas ava. What does it mean, pat ava? We thought it meant thick bread up until now. So now the Gemara completely changes tack and said, pat meruba. It doesn't mean thick bread. It means lots of bread. You can't make lots of matzah on Pesach. Ava, my karulu pas ava. So why did you use the word thick for av? So mishum da nashi belisha, because there's a lot of dough to knead, because you're making a lot of matzah or bread, but it's actually not thick. You're making it just into many, many different little loaves. The Iboy Seima, you could argue, the word av just means different things. In English, by the way, as well. The word thick in English can mean width. It can mean someone who's very unintelligent. It can mean somebody who's very close, like thick as thieves. The words can mean different things. So says the Gemara, I don't think pat av has got anything to do with the thickness of the bread. It means a lot of bread. My time, why can't you make a lot of bread or matzah on a chag? Is it because it's a lot of work? So my iri Pesach, why do you just pick Pesach? Why not every other chag? Afila beyond Tufnami. Any other chag that applies. Says the Gemara finally, Enachinami, you're right. The high Tana beyond Tushah Pesach Kai, we were just dealing with issues on Pesach, but really this applies to every chag. It's nothing to do with matzah. It's nothing to do with thickness. It just means you can't make a lot of bread or matzah. On Yom Tov Tanya Me'achim, we have a brisa just like that. Be'shamai Omrim Ein Oifim Pas Ava. Be'shamai say you can't make a lot of bread. Be'yom Tov. On Yom Tov, we'll base Hillel Matir. Now, what have we gleaned from that? So the Rishonim basically split, and you'll see why this is very important for us in a few minutes. The Rishonim split three ways. Some Rishonim understand that the conclusion of the Gemara is that we are talking about thick matzah, and we pass it like Beis Hillel, which basically means matzah can be any thickness you like. Just make sure it's not chometz. The middle position is many Rishonim say, yes, it's talking about matzah, and we go with the tefach, because Rav Yosef came back and rejected the comparison with the lechem upon him. But we still stay with the idea this is talking about the thickness of matzah, and the limit is therefore a tefach. And some Rishonim, the stricter position, the strictest position is, no, this Gemara completely did a U-turn and rejected the whole discussion of the thickness of the matzah. It said, no, we're really talking about making large quantities of bread or matzah on a regular yontif, and it's got nothing to do with matzah. The whole thing is kicked into touch, and really you have to have thin matzahs. The tefach rule does not apply. We will see soon who says what and how this comes into the lives that we live today. But for now, just understand that there is a sugya, there is a discussion in the Gemara that talks about pat ava, which may or may not be talking about how thick matzahs can be on Pesach. According to some Rishonim, you can have very thick. According to others, just a tefach. And according to others, must be thinner. But tefach is pretty thick for a matzah. Imagine having a matzah which was that thick. We will talk about that soon. Now, is there any way that we can use other things that we read in the Gemara or the Rishonim to give us any clues as to how thick matzah used to be? That sugya in the Gemara we're going to come back to. But are there any other clues? Did they use soft, thick matzahs, or did they use thin, hard matzahs? By the way, thin can also be soft. Thick doesn't have to be the only thing that's soft. You can have a thin, soft matzah. Is there any way that we can guess what kind of matzahs they used to use? So you're probably thinking, Korech. Surely Korech is the biggest giveaway. Aren't we meant to wrap the Hillel sandwich and put it all together? How can you do that with our matzah? It's completely impossible. So have a look here. As you know, on Seder night we say, Zeichel HaMikdash KeHillel. We do the Hillel sandwich. Kein Asa Hillel Bisman Shebeis HaMikdash HaYakayam. Korech, he would Korech together. He would sandwich together either matzah or maror, or Pesach matzah or maror, different versions of that. Ve'oichel b'yach. L'kayin mashin amara matzahs u'marorim yochlu. So you're going to tell me, well, obviously, korech means that you have to wrap it, and you can't wrap something with very hard matzah. So the answer is not so quick. The word korech doesn't only mean to wrap. It means to surround. Look at the Aruch HaShulchan, number 4. It says the Aruch HaShulchan, achachach notlin matzah. You take the third matzah, to do the mitzvah with it. What do we do? The samim hamaror bein hamatzah, the korchan yachad. says the Orach HaShulchan, Korach just means to surround. Like, for example, on a book, the kricha, the binding on a book is called a kricha from the word korach. It doesn't mean it has to be flexible. It just surrounds the book. So too, a wall around a town, the town is called a krach. It's called a krach because the kricha is the wall surrounding it. So maybe korach doesn't mean to wrap at all, and therefore is not a proof. Also, and let me throw this in as an interesting idea, Rabbeinu Chananel says, no, you've got the complete wrong idea. You're not meant to wrap the matzah around the maror, you're meant to wrap the maror around the matzah. Don't know if you've ever seen this, number 15, the Tanya Amru Alav al-Hillel, Rabbeinu Chananel says, this is what Hillel used to do, Shehayikorech ha-maror al-hamatzah. He'd wrap the maror, the lettuce leaves around the matzah, va'ochle v'basach, and he'd eat it together. You see, by the way, from here, the maror that they used was clearly lettuce, not horseradish. You can't wrap horseradish around anything. But according to this, and by the way, this was apparently Rav Soloveitchik's minhag as well, that for Korach, he would wrap the lettuce around the matzah. So you can't really use Korach as a proof that the matzah was thin and soft. People would like to say that, but it's actually not a very good proof because that's not necessarily what Korach means. Fine. Let's go on to another suggestion. The Gemara asks a funny question. What happens if you find moldy matzah on Pesach? You go to your kitchen one afternoon on Chol HaMoed, and you look, you open your little drawer, and there's lots of moldy stuff there. So the Shulchan Aruch paskens it like this. Look in number 16. Matzah pas be Pesach be Beisoy. If you find some bread or matzah in your house, the eini yodea im hu chametz or matzah. You can't tell by looking at it. Is this chametz from before, or is this matzah from Yom Tov? I don't know, because it's all moldy, and it looks the same. Mutar afilu b'achila says, don't worry, you can eat it. It's fine. De'azlina basabasra, because we assume it's the most recent stuff. Ve'im humu upash harbe, if it's really moldy, she'i evshalo lehit apesh kol kach mishenichlas ha'pesach, it must have taken longer than 5 or 6 days to get this moldy, so then of course it's chametz. Le'azvada hu chametz, you have to get rid of it. Vim avru mimei Pesach, look at this. But if it's already well into Pesach, shenukul litlot, nuchal litlot, we can maybe assume shenit apesh mishenichnas haPesach adata, that the matzah went moldy from the beginning of Pesach till now. Now, im anu noagim la'afot Pesach pas kam b'chol yom, if we break fresh hot matzahs every single day of Pesach, and that's how it could have gone moldy, then tole lahakel, then we can be lenient. It might be matzah. Afilu hu ma'upash harbi, even if it's really moldy. How can it be matzah? She'anu toilim, because we can assume, says the Shulchan Aruch, we can say, b'chol yom afa pascham, every day you baked hot matzah, but just threw it on top, v'natnu alav, and you put it on top of this. And that's why it went molded. Okay, let's just think about this for a second. You find something on Pesach, on Chol HaMoed, and you can't tell whether it's bread or matzah, because it's moldy. Says the Shulchan Aruch, it could well be matzah. Why? Because every day you baked fresh, hot matzah and you just shoved it on top and the matzah underneath has gone moldy and that's why it looks like mold. It's not chometz, you can eat it, it's fine. I mean, you might not want to eat moldy matzahs either, but if you did, it's not chometz. Now, one second. As far as you and I are concerned, does matzah look anything like chometz? How could you ever confuse matzah with chometz? Number one. And number two, our matzahs can never go moldy. I have matzahs in the cupboard upstairs from last Pesach. They look fine, and they taste just the same. So what kind of matzah is this? Clearly, they were talking about a different kind of matzah, says the Mishnah Brura, Din Zer, number 17, Hu Lefi Minag Zmanam, the way that they used to have matzah, Shehayo Oifin Matzahs Avaksas, he doesn't go as far as the Tefach, they used to bake thick Ura matzahs, but Loi Hayo Cholkin Bataram, Mikikra Shel Chometz, and they weren't that different. Chalukim, they weren't that different from bread. So you see from here very clearly, this is a very clear proof, that matzah back in the day used to look very different from matzah today. Number one, it went moldy. Number two, it looked more like chametz. And of course, a Yemenite matzah looks more like a laffa. You put a Yemenite matzah, laffa together next to a Yemenite pizza, and they're very similar. What's the difference between them? So the Yemenite bakers will tell you that the pizza has oil, it has maybe spices, it has other things in it. Fruit juices, whereas the matzah just has water. But they look very similar. So that there you have a clear proof that something was different back in the day. Here's a fascinating proof as well. The three matzahs. So you have three matzahs on the Seder table. Look at this minhag, old Ashkenazi minhag, number 18. Says the Torah, Amar Avi HaRosh, this is what my father the Rosh says, V'kasav, and he wrote the following. Knowing in Ashkenaz v'Tzarfat, in Germany and France, this is the minhag. La'asoysa mi'isaron zecher l'lachmei toida. They would make the matzahs, the three matzahs on the table, out of an isaron of flour. Why? Because back in the days of the temple, the loaves of the Korban Todah, the Lachmei Todah, so you made three loaves from an isaron of flour. So just like we got out of Egypt, we got out of jail, we bring a Korban Todah for getting out of jail. So too, we're bringing these matzahs as if they are our Lachmei Todah, which of course were matzahs, some chometz. So okay, that's a nice minhag, fine. So you'll bake the three matzahs on the table out of an isaron of flour. And the Mishnah Berurah says, some people don't do this minhag anymore, some people don't like it, some people still do it. Even 100 years ago, it seems that there were some people keeping this minhag. Okay, what's the big deal? So let me tell you, how much is an isaron of flour? An isaron of flour is 43.2 kibbetzim, which is 86.4 kibbetzim, It's nearly 90 kazesim in these three middle matzahs, the three matzahs on the table. Now, one second. That means each matzah is going to be almost 30 kazesim. Now, how many kazesim today? How many kazais measures are there in a standard hand matzah? The answer is two. Around half a hand matzah is a kazais. So if you're telling me that each of these mega matzahs had to be 30 kazesim, they would have to be hand matzahs 15 times the size of our matzahs. Now, obviously, you can't make a matzah 15 times the size of a regular hand matzah. It's not possible. You can't get it in an oven. And you're not allowed to make wide matzah anyway. There's a halacha like that. So how do we explain this? So it must be, number one, perhaps the kazaisim was smaller. And we talked about that, by the way, in a previous year, the evolution of the kazais. But number two, clearly, the matzahs had to be thicker. An average Yemenite matzah has around 10 kazaisim in it. So that way, you could have a situation where you had three matzahs, each of which had 30, you'll make really big ones, but very thick ones. And therefore, the Yemenites talk about how they put the fingers and the thumb underneath, and they pull like a hand width off, and they know that's a kazais. That's, they have the masora as to how they do that. So clearly, this is an unquestionable indication the matzahs used to be much thicker. Leave aside the fact that many sforim say things like, you should take from the middle matzah and give a kazais to each person, or take from the top matzah and give a kazais. How can you do that? And Reb Moshe Feinstein already comes in number 21 and says this idea of giving a kazais to each person from the matzah is impossible today because our matzahs are much thinner than they used to be. He says it very clearly. And therefore, when it says about taking a kazais from the matzah, so today you have to supplement. Everybody has to have their own matzahs because there's no way you can get more than two kazaisim out of a matzah of ours. And that's even a big hand matzah. And therefore, clearly, this is a good proof, this minhag that they used to have an isaron of flour, that the matzahs were much thicker. Another proof. Can you push your finger into a matzah? No, it just breaks. Have a look here, Shulchan Aruch, number 22. Matzah shenef ad ad she'im, Parsin Oisa, if you separate the matzah, what are you checking for? Ein chutin nimshachim mimena, that there are no stringy bits of dough that come, that stick to each other as you pull the matzah apart. Then yotzimba, then you know it's good, it's cooked enough. So, one second. If you take a matzah that we have today, obviously there's no strings of any dough. The Mishnah Berurah says another, he brings to the Chelkas Yaakov, says, alternatively, stick your finger in the matzah. And if your finger comes up moist, then you know the matzah's not cooked enough. So you stick your finger in a matzah today, see what happens. Nothing happens. You can even stick your finger in the dough before the matzah's baked. Your finger will still come out dry. Clearly, what's going on with this halacha in the Shulchan Aruch is he's talking about a very different kind of matzah. Another proof, says the Bar Hativ, number 24. People know this. What do you do with the afikoman? Hachelek hagadol yatmin. You hide the afikoman, he says. Gamra oil korcham b'mitpachad, you put it in a little cloth. Ulahanicha and yulahaniach bein hakar v'hakeses, and put it between your pillow and your chair, and sit back on it. Okay. One proof is if you try and put the matzah now under your pillow, throw it over your shoulder, walk around the room. All you're going to have for the afikoman is matzah meal. So clearly, the matzah they were talking about was something completely different. The next proof is the eruv. Now this is very interesting. The eruv. the Eruv was something that they always made from matzah. The minhag was to make the Eruv from matzah. And even in Yemenite countries, even in Sephardi countries, going back many, many hundreds of years, they used to make the Eruv just before Pesach and keep it in the shul or keep it in somebody's house all the way through Pesach and all the way to the following year. Now, if that's the case, how did they keep the matzah alive all the way through the year? How did they stop it from going moldy? Is this an indication that they used to use thinner matzahs? Well, the answer is maybe. The idea of thin matzahs is not just a modern day invention. Clearly they had matzahs that would last the whole year round. And I brought the Shulchan Aruch that I'm not going to read it now, that says that it's preferable to use the yearly Eruv, then you won't forget to do it every week. And then you can even use it on Pesach. But as I say, the minhag was that they used to make it Erev Pesach. Or a Shabbos HaGadol. So it seems that what they were making was a little bit maybe thicker than what we have today, because they did say it could sometimes go moldy, but it was clearly something thin enough that it would actually last. I'm glad we've got the picture back, because this is a bit that I wanted to actually look at some illustrations. So you see here, these are illustrated Haggadahs from different periods of time. So the Copenhagen Haggadah from the 1730s, the matzah he's carrying clearly looks a bit more like a thicker kind of matzah. It's not a very thin crossed hand matzah. Of course, you always have to ask the question, are these illustrations meant to be lifelike, or are they meant to be stylized in some way? And obviously, if you study the arts of illustrated Haggadahs, that becomes part of the conversation. So too, if you look at the Cincinnati Haggadah here, which is from the 15th century in Germany, what he's holding up there on Seder night looks a little bit more like a waffle. To me, anyway, something which is a little bit thicker, if not much thicker, than the matzah we have now. If you look at the famous bird's head Haggadah from the 14th century, so what they're making there looks much more like hand matzahs look today. You see they're making the little holes in them there as well. And then if you look at another Haggadah from Italy, 14th century Italy, that's a little bit harder to see, because he's giving that Haggadah, the matzah, over on a plate. So it's not that thick, but it nevertheless looks like some kind of a round hand matzah, which is maybe a little bit thicker. So that is some indication, maybe, that the kind of matzahs they were using. Okay, let's talk about really what the halacha is now in terms of lemaisa and what Ashkenazim are able to do. So the Ritva already in Sephardi lands claims here that the Sephardim already were making matzahs quite thin in the Middle Ages. Now, we often think of Sephardi as thick or soft and Ashkenazi as thin, but that was not necessarily the case. If you look here in the Ritva, he says, Shinagu ha'olam la'asus matzah shel chayva daka. Specifically, the Seder night mitzvahs, we want to make as thin as we can. Why is there a difference if you're worried about chometz? The answer is because we also want an extra shmira for the matzah. It has to be matzah shmura. Also, it has to be lechem oni. We want it to be as thin as insubstantial, if you like, as possible. But we call makom esher to be yevid lo asra atefach. He says, okay, if you have to go to a tefach, you can, but we should really get the matzahs quite thin. Interestingly, the Rambam, the Torah, the Rif, never mentioned the tefach. And the Shulchan Aruch is quite surprised at this. The Beis Yosef says, why don't they mention the Tefach maximum? And it could be that they actually didn't hold by the Tefach maximum. So you had different people doing quite different things. Halacha l'maisa, in number 30, the Shulchan Aruch brings down, Ein osim pas, v'pesach pas ava b'tefach. So you can't make it thicker than a Tefach. And the Mishnah Berurah comes in and says, but we try to make it much thinner wherever we can. And the Ramah, even number 31, he jumps in and says in the next halacha, the yesh la'asot hamatzas rikikin. Here's a word which is important for us. The matzah should be rikikin. What are rikikin? They should be crackers of some kind. The lo pasava, and it shouldn't be thick bread. Now, don't think that rikikin necessarily means wafer thin. It doesn't mean wafer thin. I brought you here in the Achronim, they quote that the word rikikin matzahs in Vayikra for the Korban Mincha, so the Targum Onkelos calls that esfoigin patirin. Svog is a sponge. Spongy matzah. So even rikikin can be thin, and in fact the minhag was, we'll see, that they used to bake them an etzba, one thumb width thin. So even rakikin don't necessarily mean something which is very wafer thin. They mean something that is coming down. So you can see this, matzahs are now decreasing in size. You've got originally this Gemara, which says they could be even more than a tefach, maybe just a tefach. And then Rishonim already saying like, get that thinner, 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 thinner. And we saw lots of sources that said that there was an indication matzahs used to certainly be a lot softer. And now we're down to an etzba. So how did we end up with the matzahs we have today? And the real halachic answer is, over the last couple of hundred years, something new started happening, which had never happened before, which is people started baking their matzahs in advance. Up until a few hundred years ago, the norm was to bake matzahs just before Pesach. There is actually a halachic advantage baking them after Chatzot, when already it could become chometz. Because matzah should be something that could at least theoretically become chometz. If you bake matzah today, on the 11th of Nisan, it can't be chometz. There is no such thing as chometz today because it's not Pesach. So you have to really bake matzah, or ideally, when it could at least theoretically be chometz. Of course, you have to stop it, which is a kind of high-risk strategy. So it used to be the case that people would bake matzahs only just before Pesach. And on Pesach, we saw the Shulchan Aruch, hot matzahs every day on Pesach. What happened is there was already a chumrah in the time of the Rishonim, but this became the norm. The people began to bake their matzahs well before Pesach for a few reasons. Number one, halachically, because if there is any chometz in the matzah, then at least it'll be bottle b'shishim before Pesach, meaning there is bittel b'shishim. You can nullify the chometz in the matzah, but only before Pesach. If you do it on Pesach, it won't work. So that already is a halachic chumrah. Just to be on the safe side, we'll make our matzahs early. And also, the Jews started coming into a much more urbanized reality where there were centralized matzah bakeries that shipped out matzah to the villages, to the towns all around. Once you're already making matzah in advance and shipping it out to other people, the matzah has to be long-lasting. You can't make the old-time soft matzahs anymore, because by the time they reach the people that need to eat them, they will be rock hard. They won't be edible at all. So really, what happened over the last few hundred years, the Aruch HaShulchan, he basically shows how this happened. And he says that because people used to make matzahs just before the meal, just before for the everyday fresh, so then they could be thicker, they could be softer. But that had to stop because of halachic concerns for chometz and bittel chometz, also for the fact that they had to ship them around and send them. And therefore, matzahs already by the time of the Aruch HaShulchan had come down to the size of the matzahs that we have today. And then, of course, you have the issue of gebrochts. Why did gebrochts start as a minhag? And we talked a few years ago about the minhag of gebrochts. Why are people worried about gebrochts? They're worried that there might be some little bit of unbaked dough left inside the matzah. Now, back in the day when matzah was very thick, that was obviously a real concern. Because if you have a thick matzah, we talked about pulling the matzah apart, seeing if little strings of dough join together. Once you've got that kind of a matzah, then you really do have a concern that there's some flour or dough in there that hasn't cooked. And then you dip it in your hot soup and hey presto, you've just made chometz on Pesach. So one of the concerns was the thick matzahs that made the matzahs thinner. And another concern, which people don't always realize, the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, says that people used, when they made the old-fashioned soft matzahs, they really needed them well. Now that they make these thin matzahs, they try and do it as quickly as possible. And he says, that makes me more concerned. So there are concerns at both ends. There are concerns with the thick matzahs that there's more in the middle. There are concerns with the thin matzahs, people are doing them too quickly. And therefore he said, I'm worried for all of these things, and therefore do not put any matzah or matzah meal into your liquid, etc. Also, you should just know, I was not aware of this at all, there were actually, for many communities, two types of matzah they used. One type of matzah they used, which was thinner for eating. Another type of matzah, which was thicker, they used to put on what they call a rib eisen. A rib eisen in Yiddish means a grater, okay? And they used to grate this thick matzah to make matzah meal. And again, the Shulchan Aruch HaRav talks about this thick matzah and says that there is a real concern that this thick matzah may be baked in the oven, which is too cool and it may be too thick and etc. So he said, no matzah meal, no gebrochts. And that's really where all of those thick matzahs and the way they did it previously started to can be really phased out. Already by the 19th century, the Chasan Sofer put a ban in many Ashkenazi countries on eating thick matzah. He says, you can't do it. The Chai Adam, at the start of the 1800s, urges people to make thin matzahs if they can. The Kaf HaChaim in the 19th, 20th century says, now we've never heard of anyone really making thick matzahs. Everybody has wafer thin matzahs now in Yerushalayim, the Ashkenazim, the Sephardim, and the only people who are left really that have the thick matzahs are the Yemenites. And we'll talk in a minute about whether an Ashkenazi can go for a Yemenite matzah. Fine. What about machine matzah? So you might turn around and say, well, machine matzah standardized things. Yes, it did. But just look at this early picture of a of matzahs coming off a machine matzah in the 1850s here in America. So those matzahs, okay, they don't look thick, but they don't look thin. So again, how accurate is the drawing? Good question. But it could be that even the early machine matzahs were a little bit thicker than the ones that we're used to using today. And like I said, even when they said rikikin, so rikikin may be something the size of a finger, of a thumb, doesn't have to be something which is absolutely wafer thin. Now, halacha lemaisa, it's just in the last 5 minutes. So for the last couple of hundred years, everybody except the Yemenites has been making thin matzahs. So let's say you say, well, now let me make a soft matzah. I want to eat a soft matzah. I want to have something much more warm and tasty on Pesach, and it'll be easy for me to eat my kazayas, etc. Can you do that? So there are pros and cons. There is no question that soft, thicker matzah has a much higher chance of being chametz inside. It has to be baked by someone who really knows what they're doing. The Rav Henkin, the grandfather of the recent Rav Henkin, Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin, he points out that actually there's a problem, because back in the day in Yemen, they used to use quite cool ovens to bake these soft matzahs. Now we used very hot ovens, and if you bake a soft matzah in a very hot oven, the middle will be unbaked. And therefore, like I said at the beginning, the type of oven that you use is really very relevant. So there is a concern with soft matzahs. On the other hand, they make them very quickly. They just knead them and they put them straight in the oven, and they knead them really well. And therefore, there is less of a concern in that respect. Also, there is a shaila whether very, very thin matzahs are even hamotzi. As you know, the Sfaradim, you make mazonos on matzi all the way through the year. There's even a shaila how they can make how anyone can make hamotzi on matzah on Pesach. If it's really wafer thin, is that really a staple in any way which is hamotzi? So there are pros and cons to eating the soft matzah. The shaila is, are you allowed to? Bottom line, clearly, even when hard thin matzahs was the only thing around, they were still paskening halachas for the soft ones. For example, if you look in the Shulchan Aruch HaRav or in the Aruch HaShulchan or in the Mishnah Brura, they talk about whether air spaces count towards the volume of your matzah. Now, there are no air spaces in your modern day matzah, I promise you. The air spaces are only in spongy matzah, softer matzah. And since they have a discussion about those air spaces, and they never turn around and say, well, of course, you can't eat that matzah anyway. So it sounds like they were, even though they didn't really recommend it, they were certainly open to Ashkenazim eating it, because they talk about the different ways that the air spaces are together. In terms of the modern poskim, there are three approaches. Many poskim just say no. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said, you cannot eat soft matzah today if you're an Ashkenazi because you don't have a recent Masorah. Your recent Masorah, okay, go back 1,000 years, they ate soft matzahs. But your recent Masorah is only hard matzahs, and therefore you may not depart from that. And some communities actually have issued an official ban. There was a big controversy in Australia, in Melbourne, a few years ago. And people came out saying, the community said, you can't have the soft matzahs. And Rav Eliashiv said that they're osa. And other people said, no, he didn't. He said that they're not osa, and there was a whole, you know, a whole controversy about that. Other poskim are completely lenient on it. Have a look at Rav Aviner, number 37. Says Shaila, Rav Shoma Aviner, Ha'im mutal Ashkenazim la'echol matzahs rachas. Can an Ashkenazi eat soft matzah? Very short and to the point. Tshuva, Amnon yesh oisrim. There are indeed those who say it's prohibited. Umaydin sheba avar hayochlim, but they agree that they used to eat soft matzahs. Everybody agrees on that. We saw the indications and the proofs. But they just stopped. Okay, so what's now? They're ein masoras lahatir. And now they're worried that there is no masora to say, okay. Aval ein gam masora la'asa, but there's no masora to say that they're prohibited either. He says there's no clear way to say they're prohibited. Umuska b'ramah, and we see in the Ramah already, shah matzahs haya avos, that they used to have thicker matzahs. As the hachrei chayarochas, they had to have been softer if they were thicker. V'chein b'shur v'shari tshuva v'sham. He quotes the shari tshuva kasam shehal megare mesamatzes. They used to grate the matzes on the rib eisen. Okay, in min pumpia, like a kind of grater. Simcha chayarochas, they must have been softer. And then he says, Agon Rav Asher Weiss, Rav Asher Weiss, Matir Meikadin says it's basically mutter. Although he's not happy in practical terms, we'll see soon. Rachoshesh ki ein b'kiim b'rachos. He's worried that you don't know how to make the soft ones properly. Avad Eidot HaMizrach, but says Rav Aviner, don't worry about it because the Sfaradim know what they're doing. In the Eidot HaMizrach, kein b'kiim, they are b'kiim. V'kein agon Rav Tzvi Shechter Matir, and Rav Herschel Shechter says it's okay. B'sikum, in conclusion, mutar. It is permitted. So Rav Aviner tells you you can buy soft matzahs. Ah, he mentioned Rav Shechter. I brought you here a letter that Rav Shechter wrote about 10 years ago, in fact, exactly 10 years ago, in 2011, saying that as far as he's concerned, the only relevance to the softness or hardness of the matzah is just incidental. Meaning eating a soft or hard matzah is no different, he says, than having a red or blue peroches on your Aron Kodesh. Ah, we've always had a red peroches. Someone wants to have a blue one? Okay. Wow, we never had a blue one before. It doesn't matter. There's nothing specific about the color of the parochis that makes any difference. So too, he says, in terms of the matzahs, there's no reason why you can't have a soft matzah if the people know what they're doing. And you can read his letter. He had to clarify later that he wasn't endorsing any particular brand, but he basically says it's okay. Rav Asher Weiss is the middle ground. He says, really, there's no halachic problem with it, but he's worried that people don't really know how to make them anymore, and maybe it's a problem of altitosh mitaras imecha, that there is a recent masorah not to do it, but he says if you really need to eat soft matzahs, you can do hataras nadarim, and you can have soft matzahs if you get them from a reliable heksha. So bottom line, what's the halacha? The halacha is, it depends on who you ask. Rav Shechter, Rav Aviner clearly say you can have soft matzahs as long as they're made by people who know what they're doing. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says you cannot. Rav Asher Weiss says in theory you can, but in practice you shouldn't unless you really need to. And therefore you can ask a shaila to your local Orthodox rabbi and he will tell you what to do or advise you what to do on this particular issue. But bottom line, it's clear as follows. Matzahs used to be much thicker for everybody. They gradually shrunk over the time of the Rishonim, both for halachic reasons and for practical reasons. By the time of the Shulchan Aruch Ramah, they were maximum a tefach, preferably a rakik, okay? Rakik meaning something, maybe a thumb, and gradually it became thinner and thinner and thinner as we started making them before Pesach, shipping them out, etc. And now the question is, can you eat the soft ones? So hopefully that made sense. Again, I apologize. Somebody just put up a quick question here. Why can margarine for Pesach be used in the UK and not here? This is an English question. It's all down to the issue of kidneyot oils. The UK minhag is to use certain oils which they consider not to be kidneyot, whereas in Eretz Israel, they consider some of those oils like sunflower oil, etc., to be kidneyot. It's all down to the issue of what it is and isn't in the minhag of kidneyot. We had a share about that about 2 or 3 years ago, where the new products that weren't in existence when the original minhag was made can be included or not. Okay, so, but we can't talk about that now. We haven't got time. It's already 11:15. So my thanks, by the way, to everybody who's been loyal Zoomers. My apologies for the interruptions as we've gone through the Zoom, but hopefully, Be'ezrat Hashem, 2 weeks from now, we should be broadcasting live from the OU Israel Center in Rehavia. Let's hope the technology works then. I'm sure they will work hard enough to make it work. But for now, I wish you all a Chag Kosher V'Sameach. You should have a good Yontef, you should stay well, you should enjoy your family. If you're able to be with them, if you're not, then I apologize. I'm sorry, I didn't want to be insensitive. I know in England, people can't get together yet with their families. Please God, you'll be seeing them soon. We should all have a healthy and enjoyable Yontef.